So Penny, thank you very much for that warm introduction, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land on which we meet, the Ngunnawal people, and pay my respects to the elders, both past and present. I'd obviously also very much like to thank Cedar and Lee Kelly for inviting me here today to share with you how the National Disability Insurance Scheme and the agency that administers it will shape Australia's social and economic progress in the years ahead. The NDIS is a significant and genuinely world-first policy reform. We should never forget the sheer scale of what we are trying to achieve. A national scheme across our huge country aimed at providing individual, customised packages of support to be self-directed by the participant to approaching 500,000 of our fellow Australians. And if we do it well, it will shape policy solutions considered by governments globally to deliver better economic and social outcomes, not just for the most vulnerable, but for all citizens. So today I'm going to talk to you about three things: the purpose and progress on the NDIS, the impact of the NDIS on the economy and the future of employment in Australia, and the role of service excellence and our vision for the experience of NDIS participants. So the NDIS itself was born out of the drive to do better almost 10 years ago now. Before the NDIS, funding for disability support would go to an organisation. As a person with disability, you might not have had any choice about which organisation gave you support. You might not have had a say in who supported you and how. Support was capped, inequitable, and dependent very largely on where you lived. But the fundamental premise to transfer the purchasing power from governments and providers to individuals, in doing so, the NDIS has created one of the largest market opportunities in recent history. And that's a good reason why CEDA and its members should be particularly interested and supportive of this reform. By giving people choice and control over their own lives, the NDIS gives people with a disability the tools to make the kinds of decisions about their lives that so many of us take for granted. Big decisions like where to live and with whom, and daily decisions like when to eat and when to shower. Over time, the NDIS has also been shown to open up all kinds of new pathways for participants and their families and carers. Ultimately, it should mean that hundreds of thousands of Australians who have been locked out of shaping and leading their communities have the opportunity to change the fabric of Australia for the better. It is, as I said before, a world-first reform that in just 6 years has brought together eight state and territory systems into one, become available across the whole country following a progressive rollout, grown quickly to deliver supports to now more than 338,000 people, 40% of whom have never received supports from the state before. Increased participation in social and community activities by 14% for participants aged 15 years and up who have been in the scheme for 3 years or more, and decreased the number of young people in residential aged care under the age of 65 by 13% between March 17 and September 19. They're just a few of the sort of achievements to date. As a transformational reform, the path to ensuring the NDIS delivers on its promise has been challenging. And while the NDIS is working well for lots of participants, it is true that with an undertaking of this size, there will be and are things we can do better. We haven't got it right for every person, every time, but I do believe we're getting there. I talk to a lot of participants, and no one has ever said to me they want to go back to the way it was. For context, never again will so many participants enter the scheme in such a compressed time period. We're moving closer to a mature scheme where new participants join to changes in life circumstance, and existing participants are able to focus on achieving their goals through full and flexible use of their plans. Wait times have been a concern for both the agency and, more importantly, for participants. with the agency sometimes taking too long to make decisions and settle participant plans. But it's pleasing to see in the latest quarterly report released earlier this week that the average time taken to determine eligibility is now 4 days, well below the 21-day target. Wait times on average for a first plan are 42% lower for adults and 58% lower for kids compared to 6 months ago. And the number of children waiting more than 50 days for a plan has reduced from 1,686 to 712, so more than halved over the October to December quarter. So while these results are encouraging, the drive to do better that launched the NDIS into being almost 10 years ago is still calling. But first, before I go on to some further detail on that, I want to talk to you about an example, about Cameron McMullen, 35 years old, a quadriplegic from Ulladulla in New South Wales. Prior to tragically breaking his neck during a swimming accident 9 years ago, Cameron was very busy running his own business and raising two young sons. After the accident, he was largely housebound and unable to work or participate fully in family life. When he joined the NDIS in 2017, his main goal was to drive again with a vehicle modified using his plan funds. He bought a van, modified it, went through the relicensing process, and recently took delivery of the van. Since then, he has been regularly taking his sons to sporting activities, secured work as a delivery driver, and volunteered to deliver food to bushfire-hit communities on the New South Wales south coast in recent weeks. The modifications he was able to get for his van as part of his NDIS plan have totally changed Cameron's life. From Cameron's example, I want to broaden out to consider the impact of the NDIS on the economy and the future of work in Australia. Funding for disability services has increased from $8 billion in 2015-16 to $17.8 billion in the 2019-20 portfolio budget statements. The Productivity Commission estimates that the scheme will be responsible for about 90,000 new jobs in the disability sector over the next 5 years. And that means the number of people employed in the sector will almost double, from 100,000 to 190,000. And this represents one in five of all new jobs created in Australia over the next 5 years. As the purchasing power shifts from block funding by governments to providers to individuals, new and innovative businesses are being created. The opportunity is perhaps the largest in remote and rural areas of Australia, where the market for disability services or the supply of disability services has traditionally been thin. Since the start of the scheme, almost 14,000 providers have provided services to participants in the scheme. As one example, there have been a range of new providers have entered the market, including platforms to match NDIS participants with support workers, such as HireUp, Mabel, Home Care Heroes, and Care Seekers. These different platforms engage support workers in different ways. Some employ support workers directly, and others provide access to workers who have set themselves up as independent contractors. In many cases, supports engaged via online platforms are at a discount to the standard NDIS price caps because the online platform provides savings to the service provider from reduced overhead costs and advantages from technology. This means more support hours for less money for the NDIS participant. Mabel, for example, raised $15 million in venture capital funding recently to further develop its marketplace to meet growing consumer need. And the business has grown 140% in their last year alone, and since they launched, have facilitated more than 2 million hours of support care with more than 5,600 active carers on their books. The enormous growth in spending and disability services from the NDIS provides an incredible platform for innovation. And there are many more stories like these business platforms. The opportunity for businesses to find new and efficient ways, including the use of a range of new technologies for people with a disability to achieve their goal, is, I think, one of the most significant market opportunities available today. And we at the agency are committed to encouraging businesses to embrace that market opportunity by, firstly, encouraging new entrants to the market and helping businesses make data-driven decisions by publishing information about the number of services being delivered, the number of participants using and funded to purchase services in any given district. We have a range of data sets and visualisation tools on the website to support providers and new entrants to the market to make informed decisions on their service offerings and market entry investments. We continue, secondly, to review the pricing for services provided under the NDIS, consulting widely and being more transparent in communicating our decisions. The annual price review for this year is well underway. We need provider and sector input to ensure pricing updates reflect the challenges participants and providers are facing. And we're working closely to ensure we publish updates to the price guide early enough for providers and participants to adjust their pricing and service delivery models. We're also recruiting new expert members to our pricing regulation reference group to ensure that the sector is widely represented. And thirdly, we continue to seek to improve the way we do business with providers. We need to refine our systems and processes so that we are getting it right for every participant every time. We're very conscious of the provider experience as well, recognising how integral providers are to the success of the scheme. We have set up a network of contacts across each state and territory dedicated to working with providers to ensure that businesses have a single gateway to raise questions, get information they need, and provide a streamlined escalation process. We are also currently trialling digital API integration with six large providers to enable seamless and secure integration with our business systems in real time, and plan to significantly expand this to providers big and small, as well as other platforms, software providers, and integrators. If I move to the second major theme, the overall economic impact and employment, the economic impact of the NDIS isn't just about the money participants will spend. It's about enabling people with disability more opportunities to fully engage in the workforce. It's about enabling carers the ability to engage in paid work because the people they care for and love have adequate support. It's about unlocking the potential of a workforce eager to work and adequately supporting them to enter the workplace. Let's talk a little bit more about carers. Our Families and Carers Outcomes Report, in which we surveyed 140,000 Australians with disability, as well as 77,000 family members and carers, shows us that the rate of employment for parents and carers of people with disability is at least 30 percentage points lower than the rest of the population. But that is changing. The employment rate for families and carers of participants under 25 in the scheme over their first year has increased by 3.1 percentage points. The hours worked have also increased, with the proportion of family members and carers surveyed working 30 or more hours per week rising from 41 to 43%. So this is small but encouraging progress in a short time. And of course, we're also working hard to ensure better access to employment for participants themselves. Today, 83% of all people with disability in Australia are not in the workforce. This places us, unfortunately, at number 21 out of 29 OECD countries for employment of people with disability. And on that scorecard, it's not good enough. We also know that for individuals, economic participation means so much more than just getting a job. It becomes part of our identity and gives us a sense of belonging. Working can unlock the door to becoming truly independent, and we all have a right to seek independence through work. It also has major consequences for the health of the economy. Participation, alongside population and productivity, is of course one of the three P's of economic growth. As part of the NDIS's participant employment strategy, we're committed to increasing the number of working age NDIS participants in meaningful work from 24% to 30% by 2023. We've developed an implementation plan to support participants to enter the workforce and find employment that suits them. The strategy also sets about increasing market innovations that improve the path to paid work and improving the confidence of employers to employ NDIS participants. We ourselves in the agency have attempted to take a leadership role as an employer of choice for people with disability. At the NDIA, we have 12% of staff who identify as having a disability, well more than the public service average and any other public service agency. But again, we can do a lot better. We know that for employers, employing people with disability can improve your workplace in many ways. Employees with disability are reliable. People with a disability take fewer days off, take less sick leave, and stay in jobs longer than other workers, according to the Australian Safety and Compensation Council. And the International Labour Office's investigation into disability in the workplace back in 2010 showed employees with disability are productive. Once in the right job, people with a disability perform as well as any other employee, and safe. Workers with a disability are no more likely to be injured at work than other employees. Employing with a person with a disability is proven to be good for business as well. Evidence tells us that employing people with disability better reflects the customer base and improves customer engagement, broadens the range of talent and experience in the workforce, and leads to improved retention through employee loyalty. All of us in this room have a responsibility to do more to close the gap in employment for people with a disability. Employing people with a disability is not a kindness or a charity. It's been shown, as I've mentioned, that a workplace that reflects the wider diversity of our community is likely to lead to greater customer loyalty and satisfaction. Start thinking about whether your workplaces are physically accessible. Are your meetings set up so that everyone can participate? How are you ensuring that your recruitment practices are inclusive? And so I'd ask you to consider how you can make a difference in your organisations in employing more people with a disability. There have been grants through the Information Linkages and Capacity Building Program as part of the NDIS, and these grants fund innovative projects to provide greater opportunities to participate in work. Projects like developing a community of practice between employers, promotional activities to attract people to certain roles, and creation of workplace inclusion plans. So I'd encourage you to tap into these programs to provide greater opportunities for people with disability to participate in work and think about what you can do to drive change in your own organisations. We turn to the third major topic, which is service delivery excellence. Improving choice and control for people with disability is the why of the NDIS. It's why we are here and it's why we are driven to do better. But as the NDIS transitions from rollout to full scheme, it's imperative we also revisit the how. From 1 July 2020, the Participant Service Guarantee will set new standards for the time it takes for key steps in the NDIS processes. This means there will be shorter and agreed timeframes for people to receive a decision on whether they will be covered by the NDIS and to receive an NDIS plan and to have a plan reviewed. This guarantee is one of the key recommendations of the recently released TUNE report. The Participant Service Guarantee, or PSG, also calls for activities to be built around 5 engagement principles. The NDIA should be transparent, with participants and prospective participants having access to information about the NDIS and their plans that is clear, accurate, consistent, up-to-date, easy to understand, and available in formats that meet their needs. Responsive participants and prospective participants are supported and their independence is maximised by addressing their individual needs and circumstances. Respectful. Participants and prospective participants are valued, listened to, and respected. Empowering. Participants are empowered to make an access request, navigate the NDIS system, participate in the planning process, and use their plan supports. And connected. That we break down barriers so that participants and prospective participants are connected to the services and supports that they need. So I'd like to share a few of my early thoughts for what we are going to do to deliver a scheme that meets the PSG and meets those principles. Let me start by talking about how we will improve the way we communicate with participants and the way they get information from us. We know that one of the most significant areas we have to improve is the simplification of our communications as a whole, our forms, letters, and the rules we use. Participants deserve to understand how we make decisions and why we've made a decision. So in future, participants will increasingly have a single point of contact for all of their interactions with us. We'll put the name of a real person on our letters to them, and they'll be able to use online forms and services and track online where their case is up to. Our decision letters about access and plans will have reasons in plain English for why we've decided something. Participants will be able to access their personal data and plan details without having to ask through a Freedom of Information request. Equity also means using simple language that everyone can understand. As an example, we fund reasonable and necessary supports, relating to a participant's disability to help them live their life and achieve their goals. But we know that what is reasonable and necessary can be subjective. That's why our guidelines will come with plain English descriptions and examples and clearer and more certain guidance up front on what reasonable and necessary means. We're making it easier to find what you need on the NDIS website. We've introduced already web chat to help people find the information they need more easily. This function will develop and improve over time. We've started developing easy-to-read sections of the website, displaying the information in a format more accessible for all people. The first section is all about employment and how we can support people to get involved in paid work. We're in the process of refreshing the participant portal, which is the tool that participants use to manage their plans and make it simpler to use and easier to understand. And soon it will be simpler for participants to apply with improved online access request forms. And finally, we'll have new publicly available guidelines and procedures so there is consistency and more transparency in how we make decisions. Then we turn to getting access to the scheme and the support for engaging with us. We also want to improve the way participants get access to the scheme and increase support for engaging with us. Increasingly, we will be using independent functional assessments to provide an objective and consistent evaluation of a participant's functional ability. This means that no matter where you are, be it Manuka or Broken Hill, Manuka even, supported funding will be based on a fair and equitable assessment of your needs. I like the honey too. We'll have the support of specialist community connectors in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and called communities to deeply understand how participants want to engage with us. And we're recruiting justice and hospital liaison officers to help at-risk participants interact with the scheme in each state and territory to get them out of hospital quicker and have access to the right supports. There will be an NDIS Carer Connect network for ageing parents of people with a disability, and our frontline teams will have improved cultural and disability awareness. Then moving to making and using your plan, the NDIS was built on the idea that everyone's situation is different, which is why we have flexibility in planning and why everyone's plan should be different. It's clear that the processes and systems we use to be able to manage the fast pace of transition didn't always suit individual circumstances. So we want to listen and change. We want to give participants more flexibility in how they make and use their plan. To do this, we will focus on equitable planning decisions, ensuring funding is more certain, fair, and decisions made more quickly. We'll use the information received from functional capacity assessments to be the starting point for a plan budget. This will ensure consistent planning decisions and funding is fair and equitable no matter where you live. We'll build goals and participant plans together that are clearly defined, realistically attainable, and participants will be able to have a face-to-face meeting with the person who makes a decision about your plan, supports, and funding. Participants will be able to get plan summary statements and draft plans before their plan is approved so they can check their information is right and there are no surprises. We will look to extend plan duration even further so that wherever possible and appropriate, plan reviews are only initiated in line with significant life milestones, such as starting school and finishing school, getting a job, moving house, or other changes in support needs. Planned budgets will be a lot more flexible, so participants can use their funded supports as they wish and not be limited to specific budgeted amounts by category. And lastly, we'll look to increase our support for particular groups. We know there are additional obstacles for people with complex support needs or those exiting justice, hospital or other settings in setting up and using their NDIS plan. That's why we will increase our direct support for you if you have complex needs and require critical supports. There will be fewer young people in residential aged care who are NDIS participants, with no new entrants to aged care over time. We'll also begin trialling commissioning services directly for participants in remote and very remote areas, and early intervention supports for children, and provide early intervention supports for children more flexibly. So here again, I think, is where you can come in. We should be so proud that all Australians have the peace of mind if they, their child or loved one is born with or acquires a permanent and significant disability, that they will get the support they need. Everyone in this room plays a part in creating a more inclusive Australia. The NDIS was always part of a broader vision for people with disability. Many of the challenges facing Australians with disability are historic and have their foundations in our communities long before the NDIS. The whole community, not just the agency, needs to address these foundational issues such as lack of housing, lack of accessible transport, thin markets outside the metropolitan areas, and widespread lack of access to employment for people with disability. These issues do not have a quick fix and have been long-standing. It requires cooperation and coordination between states and territories, different governments and agencies, and between us here in this room. The NDIA and its partners and the broader Australian community need to do more to ensure our communities and workplaces are inclusive of people with disability. We're actively involved in the consultations now to shape future national disability policy, including the new disability strategy for beyond 2020. The National Disability Strategy provides a unified national approach to improving the lives of people with disability, their families and carers, and also provides leadership, we hope, for a community-wide shift in attitudes. The creation of Services Australia also means comprehensive change to how Australians engage with government services, including using improved technology to make sure people have a seamless experience between the NDIS and other systems. With all of this, we know there is more to do, but we do know what to do, and we can and will do it better. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to help. The story, to finish, of 25-year-old Kate in Melbourne demonstrates to me the impact the scheme is having and where you can all contribute. Through the NDIS, Kate, who has Down syndrome, uses her NDIS funding to maintain a busy schedule, including acting, dancing, volunteering, studying, and working on her own radio program. She's studying a Certificate 3 in childcare while volunteering at a local childcare centre. Her NDIS funding covers support workers who help improve her literacy, numeracy, and time management and planning skills, critical skills to get her into the paid workforce. Kate and her family say the NDIS is allowing her to have more learning opportunities, and she is now working towards paid employment and moving out of home. Think about your next recruitment round, your disability employment strategy. Think about the services you provide and how you can make them more accessible for people with disability. How can you support someone like Kate take the next steps towards paid employment? Think about how you and your organisation can do better for people with disability, just as I'm thinking about how the agency will do better. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to taking questions.